Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. And we're going to be joined by England and now post-scrum half, Dan Robson, shortly. So that'll be fun. But we'll have a brief catch-up first, Johnny, about all things top 14, everything else in between. And not just that, you were rushing off last week to celebrate your birthday, not Finn's, and you were very excited about your Paw Patrol cake. So was it nice?
Mate, it was delicious. We're still finishing off the remnants now. And like you, mate, it will be fun. Like you said, it'll be fun having
yes,
Dan.
Yes, it will. We'll make sure it will.
The pair of force fun, it will be. The pair of us battling through, both of us have both been crook, which has been good crack this week. But no, it was good. Birthday was good. Now we're getting into Christmas, mate. Like, birthday quickly forgotten. It's presents.
Oh, yeah.
It's getting ready.
Too early.
Mate, our Christmas tree went up yesterday. It's nothing to do with me. But what is now brilliant is that she's always loved Christmas, right? The Christmas tree's up early, yeah. But now you've got three small kids, like the decoration of the tree, it was her thing before, but now she has to watch them butcher her tree. So I loved that last night. That was good crack. And yeah, now flights are booked back home for Christmas, a few more games to wind down, and then hopefully a bit of Christmas holidays. So no, all good here, mate. There's a bit of a cold snap as well. It was down to like zero.
Very Christmassy.
Very Christmassy, you would say. So no, it's good, mate. A change of the seasons, it's cool.
I'm with you on the other half being very Christmassy and all for it. But I always manage to hold out till 1st of December. You got to do better, Johnny.
Mate, I don't make the decisions. And also, another thing we've discovered this year, I don't know about everyone else listening, but we've always, like, it's always surprised me how much Christmas trees cost.
Yeah.
Have you ever got a Christmas tree from IKEA?
No.
€25. And then when you go back in February with the receipt, you get your €25 back to spend in IKEA. Absolute bargain. So that's been the find of the Christmas so far this year. I'm happy now. The rest of it's done. But yeah, another find from the missus. We're normally fleeced for Christmas trees, but this year you're making money. Get some meatballs, some salmon in IKEA. Come February, I'll be a happy man.
I'm sure there's some T&Cs we should add to that you're not allowed to take stuff back after you've used it for 2 months, but there you go.
And I don't work for IKEA. I just thought it was excellent. Well done then.
But artificial Christmas trees, I agree, the way to go. Like, better for the environment, I'm sure, and don't cost an absolute fortune.
Mate, this ain't artificial.
Oh, really? A real one?
This is like a 2.50 meter better tree than we've ever had before. It was €25.
Well, and they give you your money back.
And you get your money back.
Okay, I'll take it back. This is
there you go. Take it all back. That's the way forward.
Maybe it's only in France. I don't know. I'm going to check this out after we've finished.
Check out, mate. Telling you.
Aside from the Paw Patrol cake and the Christmas trees and everything else, there's been a bit going on in the top 14. And we normally do this later on, but I think we should do it now. Some rumours, because they're massive. And
yep.
There's only a few this week. There might be more that we haven't found. But they're big ones. We've seen Jack Singleton looks like he's arrived in Toulon as a medical joker from Gloucester. What else have you seen?
He's class, by the way. I've loved watching him play in the Prem for England. We mentioned a few weeks ago, but it looks like a done deal now. Lewis Ludlam. And I wasn't sure how that'd be. Like, I've watched Lewis play, watched him play, obviously, for England. He was very good as well. He's pretty much the only player for Northampton that was decent against La Rochelle last season. But the top 14 is a different bracket, right? And normally if it's a big back row signing, it's a monster they take. It's a big 125 kg, and he's a grafting, ball carrying, good over ball, like generally really good, but will he have that impact? Not sure.
Can play across the back row as well though.
Exactly. So he's like a Swiss Army knife, which is great. But, you know, meter moment of the week, the past few weekends, we've had a couple of young Toulon back rowers that are half handy as well. So interesting with him. But I think that's sort of symptomatic of what we're seeing with the Premiership at the minute, with financial problems, rumoured to be another side that hasn't been able to pay their players on time in the past month. Are there going to be more players moving over? Maro Itoje is the one that's been spoken about everywhere over here. Where would he fit in? He's been offered a 50% drop in his salary by Saracens. They're backing Owen Farrell as their marquee player. They have to drop another one. That's going to be Maro. So where does he go? Where does he fit? If he wants to keep playing for England and he wants to play for the British and Irish Lions in their tour to Australia, could he play for another side in the Premiership? Probably not. But he'd be excellent in the top 14. So Lyon rumoured to be in for him with a few other clubs. Big one looks like a done deal. Still young as well. George North. Like, they've already announced the salary and everything. Second division, Aix-en-Provence. He'll be joining Jimmy Gopperth, who's down there. 30 grand a month. He's rumoured to be picking up. He gets off the wage bill for the Welsh Rugby Union, who look to be struggling as well. I think the Ospreys are going from like 5.2 to 4.5 million is there. Salary cap next season as well, so that's a big chunk out of that.
Will they be in the top 14 next season or not?
Mate, like somebody that's been down in the Pro D2 and come up, it ain't easy. And there's a lot of luck in, but you can have the best side, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to come up. And I know they've got Jimmy Gopperth, and they've got a couple of quality players in the back row as well they've added there. So they've got quality, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to bounce or leap straight back into the top 14. But look, George is quality. He's a quality rugby player. He can also play now in Pro D2. He'd play 12, 13 and wings. He'd play every single week. But it's crazy to think, like, double British and Irish Lion, 31 years old, Pro D2. It's like Ross Moriarty as well. Just shows the state of Welsh rugby at the minute and how these boys are having to drop down early. They're young. It's not like they're old boys like me and you're 33, 34 clinging on at the end. And these are top level internationals. Another one, again, probably with what's happening in the Premiership, Johnny Gray, potentially away from Exeter. I know Scottish Rugby would love to have him back as well, but rumoured to be linking up with Yannick Brew and Bordeaux. So look, loads going on, quality players, and it's not going to be the end of it. I think this is the start. These are top level players, and the financial situation in the UK at the minute just isn't the same as the top 14. France at the minute is rude in its health, and they can afford to bring these boys over.
And we might chat a bit more about the action on the pitch later on, but a few things that cropped up over the weekend, one of which is Sir Khaleesi's debut went well, but aside from his performance, another try for Henry Arundel on the Racing side of things, but Teddy Thomas against his old club, hell of a clothesline on Nolan Le Garrick.
Mate, did you reckon that was a red?
Oh, I mean, it looked dramatic.
It's a soft red. Like, I reckon his initial contact's with the top of his chest, but it looks so bad. And then once everything's put on the big screen, it looks even worse. But that wasn't a red for me. There's no real contact to the head. I know it's dangerous. It's quick. But for me, it's a forearm touching the top of a chest and sliding up, which, yes, doesn't look good. But there's no real danger to a concussion, I wouldn't say. So there's no reason to really remove him from the field. But that's it. Teddy Thomas, red. The woes continue for La Rochelle. Racing, they march on. They pick up another bonus point. Sia Khaleesi was industrious as ever. I was thinking, actually, you'll probably take less of a time to adapt, given you've got Stu Lancaster, English speaking, as your head coach, to get in and integrate with your systems. He should get up to speed fairly quickly. And he was just industrious. He was busy, didn't carry the ball too well, but you can just see how efficient he is. When he gets around the park, he's got a big engine, clear outs, tackling was decent. So good to see him make his mark in the top 14. He's also clearly going to be wheeled out everywhere. And I mean, he was everywhere in France this week. He was all over the Canal Plus Rugby Club. He was jumping up and down and dancing with fans at the end of the game. The week before, he's, you know, player cam in the stadium when he wasn't even playing. They absolutely love him. So now, look, one of the biggest personalities, one of the most successful captains of all time, now playing in the top 14, and it isn't going to stop. He's going to be absolutely everywhere. So good luck to him and a good first hat in his first game.
On the opposite end of the scale, we obviously spoke about Montpellier last week, a change in coaching staff, no change in fortune, 7 defeats in a row now, losing at home to Oyonnax. They're already 8 points adrift of 12th. Can you see them getting relegated?
I want to say no, but I mean, they're properly bad.
Can happen to anyone, can't it?
It can happen to anyone. And you said, you just mentioned the 12th place team, that's Bayonne, right? So they're 8 points off Bayonne. And unfortunately for Montpellier, they're going to Bayonne this weekend. And Bayonne don't tend to lose at home. Like, going to Jean Dauger is a hard place to go. So, mate, I can see them losing again this weekend. But they conceded 4 tries at home to Oyonnax. And I love Oyonnax. I love Joel Abd, who used to be my coach as well at Cast. They're well organised. But 4 tries at home without that much firepower. Huge result for Oyonnax. But, I mean, it's desperate now for Montpellier. What they need is the European break. That cannot now come quick enough. They need to try and pick something up on the road this weekend and buy on a bonus point or nick something. They need to get something the week before European rugby starts, and then they just need to regroup. Like, I can see them completely binning any approach to targeting any of those games in Europe, resting players, getting everyone together, having that type of social bond, getting what you need from the coaches. How are we going to play? How are we going to change this round? And they need to come out flying. The game just before New Year and after New Year, before the second round of European matches, so that block of top 14 around Christmas and New Year, they need to pick up points quickly. A shot in the arm, confidence, and then they need to fly come the end of February during those doublons when they don't lose too many players during the Six Nations. They need to pick up some wins and quickly. I don't want to see, I can see them going down because it's my former club. I've still got mates that are playing in the side. I know some of the boys that are now in the coaching staff as well, Vincent Echeto, who's just arrived. And you've got to hope with the quality they've got, they can turn it around because they've got decent players, some top level international players in that side. But they just look lost, mate. Like even Oina there, Oina were down to 13 men before halftime and they couldn't score. They were trying to take different options, try and plow over from scrum, then quick taps. They were just trying everything and they almost looked like they were over trying and nothing quite went right. It was Kobus Reinach and then they got held up over the line and a big celebration for Oina and a psychological shift. So mate, they just need one big result, one big night out together. I don't know what it is they need, but they need to get back together and figure out how they want to play because they've got the talent to change it, but it needs to be quick. Otherwise, these games can start to drag and it becomes a dark, dark place. And that's with the new coaching staff. We've already arrived. You'd hope for them. They were thinking, right, Oina, boys up from Porto, we'll get these boys at home, straightforward. Wasn't to be. So difficult times, but hopefully they can turn it around.
Right, we'll have a chat with Dan Robson in just a minute and we'll touch more on the top 14 later on. But first, let's find out what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
Well, it was his first game at Chaban Delmas for our mate Damian Penno, and he managed to bag four tries in a half of rugby and made it look like kid stuff. He was absolutely exceptional. I know he's playing in a back line that now, for me, is one of the best back lines on the planet. You've also got a brand new backs coach there that is absolutely flying as well. He's agreed to come on, Noel McNamara. He wants to come on and do a podcast with us at some point. But Penno's doing absolutely everything. Interceptions, defensive duties, kick chase. He's absolutely everywhere. You can tell he's enjoying his time and he looks happy and comfortable with the side that he's in, but four tries in one half of rugby and made it look like a piece of piss. So he was absolutely phenomenal and seems to be happily settled in Bordeaux.
And it was a move that obviously raised eyebrows at the time. Now, when you look at it, moving from Clermont, who were doing pretty well themselves, they've turned things around a little bit, but to go into that back line is just frightening what could happen. He's made a good start, but it could get even better.
Mate, even, and the thing is, like, I don't want to say it was easy, but the interception, great read. His defensive hustling is coming to his game that he didn't have, right? But two of the tries were essentially created for him and handed to him on a plate because of that backline. So the players that he's got inside of him, the organization with Noel as well, who clearly is one of the best young coaches, an Irishman in the top 14, he is not going to stop scoring. Every time he touched the ball, he was in space next to the try line. He was sort of flopping over with 14 his back in that right side of the field. And it just looked ridiculously easy. So he's got pace to burn. He's got quality inside him. And this is just the start. And again, it did raise eyebrows because Clermont were a huge club, but they were in turmoil last year. So he probably thought, right, Cammy Lopez and these boys have all left. It's sort of change of the guards. And he would have known who was signing at Bordeaux. Yannick Brewer would have told him what that backline was going to be and what he could expect to play with. And now you can see the product. So absolutely class.
There we go. Not a controversial one in any way this week. Damian Penno is Johnny's meter moment of the week. And Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full price item at meter.com.
And if you haven't already done your Christmas shopping, mate, there's a no-brainer. I've got myself three. I've got my dad different things from Meter last year. He's going to get different stuff this year, but it's so easy.
A whole load of bundles as well, all sorts of packages.
It's top class.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've done your meet a moment of the week, Johnny. We haven't mentioned Poe, who are absolutely flying at the moment. They are going better than they have done at any point over the last 5 or 6 decades since they won the French title in the 60s. So it's the perfect time to get someone from there on. And we've got someone. England and now Poe scrum half, Dan Robson, joins us. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We nearly had you on last week, we should mention. I think it was your other half's birthday. A very good reason to delay by a week. It was Johnny's birthday as well last week, and he was rushing off to have some Paw Patrol birthday cake. So did you get your other half a cake?
Yes. I actually made her a cake for the first time ever with a bit of help. But recently become a dad. It's changed my whole outlook on things. So now I'm baking. So
Johnny's your man for dad advice. But what was the cake? Was it a Paw Patrol cake? Or
it wasn't a Paw Patrol cake. No. Maybe in a couple of years, just a nice little chocolate one.
It was a homemade call on the caterpillar. I know exactly the one that homemade it. Did you get were the kids in helping you make it? There's some serious brownie points if you rope them in, mate.
Absolutely. He is 6 weeks old at the minute, so no.
So he was front and centre. We get it.
he was there in spirit, but no helping hands.
Well, we might come back to the dad advice later on. Johnny's got tons of it, as I said. But Poe, absolutely flying. So you must be loving life in France.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, like anything, when you're winning and when things are going well, everything kind of improves your outlook on things. But for sure, it's a wonderful place to be here. A little bit unknown. I didn't know too much about the place itself when I came here last year. It was kind of thrust upon me a little bit with all the situations that happened last year. But, you know, as I've grown to stay here and grow to know the area and the people, it's a lovely place to be. And, you know, the fans have been wonderful and, you know, we're really enjoying our rugby. And I think that's showing in the results at the minute.
It's a beautiful place to be. And we'll talk about how you got there in a second. But let's talk a little bit about the performance aspect, because last year you finished 12th. Currently, you're absolutely ripping it up. You're sitting in second. So what's changed?
I think for me, it was obviously difficult personally coming in kind of halfway through the season just to try and figure out what was going on throughout the whole club and, you know, the greater squad. And I think being here now from pre-season has helped that. And we've just focused on a couple of real basic things. I think we haven't overthought it. We're not overplaying our card. We're not getting ahead of ourselves at all. You know, we've got a very tight-knit group, which is wonderful, and we work hard for each other, and we want to perform. And you know, I think it's been good. I think our defence and our discipline, you know, two of the things we've really focused on have been impressive. Probably bar a little blip the other week against Bayonne, but that's going to happen. And I think the important thing for us is to make sure that we're as consistent as possible. And I think last year we probably would have let that performance last week against Bayonne, you know, affect our performances throughout the coming weeks as well. Where last week we parked it pretty well, and you know we took some harsh learnings and we turned those around in the week against Stade Français, which was really pleasing for my point of view.
You mentioned you arrived midway through last season. Obviously, that was because of everything that unfolded at Wasps. But just talk us through, from a personal perspective, how the move to Poe came about. And I guess what your first impressions were. If you didn't know much about the club when you did get there, what are your first impressions?
Yeah, it was obviously everyone kind of knows the story now. It's we're not the anomaly, unfortunately, at Wasps. So, yeah, it happened. And probably a couple of weeks after that, I was finding my feet a little bit and talking to a couple of Premiership clubs, and you know, I asked my agent to put the feelers out there abroad as well, just to really kind of, you know, see what was out there and use this negative thing that's happened and maybe try and experience something different for, you know, 6-7 months for the rest of the year, and see what was available. And you know, it was tough. I spoke to a couple of Premiership clubs, but it was difficult to really feel anything attached to it, or the Premiership itself, I probably felt quite bitter towards as well, with everything that happened. And, you know, it was tough to kind of really buy into anything that I was hearing. And that was probably just my mindset at the time. And then my agent spoke to me about Poe coming in and, you know, potentially wanting me for the rest of the season. And, you know, I said, let's explore it. Let's see what's going on. And then they came back and were keen, and it was just, they just beat La Rochelle away off the back of it as well. So I was like, yeah, let's get me there. I'm ready. And then, yeah, it was a week later I was here, and you know, another week after that playing, coming off the bench my first game. So it was all pretty sudden. But you know, it's something I wanted to do for a long time anyway, and try and explore different avenues of rugby and experience different cultures and how different, you know, countries do things. And it was a difficult time, but yeah, last year was fun, because I threw myself into it, and I kind of took, you know, myself into a different role and just went, look, just go and enjoy your rugby, just don't think about anything else, don't think about anything, just go out and play and enjoy. And that's kind of where we ended up. So yeah, it's been a good year now.
And now that you've been here a while, Dan, you touched on a little bit there, the differences between different cultures and how people approach the game. So what is it that you've seen that you've enjoyed, liked, disliked, the differences between Prem and Top 14 that you've absorbed so far?
What I've enjoyed here is kind of the analysis more than anything is pretty limited. And that's not in a negative way. It's not that anyone's kind of doing more or doing less. It's probably just the mindset of the French players and the French squad is, you know, focus on ourselves a little bit. Yeah, we'll watch a bit of footage of other teams, but I think sometimes you can get dragged down by footage, and you know, you're going into a game and you're thinking 10 different things at once, and it kind of takes away from your instinctive play. And for me, that's such a big part of my game. So, you know, I feel like when I'm going into these games, I'm very clear in the head. I understand our game plan. I understand what we want to do. And, you know, teams are going to throw curveballs at you, of course. That's what you do, and that's what you expect at top-level sport. So it's just about reacting. And I think, you know, the clearer you are in the head with that, the better you can react. So I think that's one of the big things. I think they're very, very focused on themselves and how to adapt their game plan. It's not too worried about changing every week to suddenly fit into a different team. I think, you know, in the Premiership, sometimes we could change our whole attack structure, our whole like card, as it were, going into week by week by week. And it's quite a lot. It kind of takes up a lot of the week as well. So here we're pretty basic with that, but it works really well for us.
We had Ben White on the show last week, who was just settling into life in Toulon. And he was interesting. He was talking about the role of a scrum half in France. Obviously, we know historically they're arguably more important than the fly half. They sort of take a more prominent role. And he was kind of motivated to move to France slightly because of that. So how have you found that in terms of kind of maybe, I don't know, leading a little bit more than you would have had to in the Premiership?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think every team's different with that. I think for me, when I was at Wasps and we had Lee Blackett and stuff driving our attack, he was very influential in getting our nines into the game. He was very big on that, almost, you know, like what Whitey was saying in France, that they're so, you know, influential. It was pretty similar that for us at Wasps. I felt like, you know, I was never really out of the game. There was always chances for me to get in the game and have an effect on the game. So Yeah, it's probably similar to that for me. And here it's just about making sure that for me and Poe and what we're doing at the minute is just we can be as consistent as possible and influencing the team, if that's on the pitch or off the pitch, trying to now be a leader a lot more this year. We're slowly learning some French and getting the language stuff going so I could, you know, help the boys as much as I can. So, you know, it obviously helps having Joe outside as well sometimes, the little English duo. But yeah, it's different for sure. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's miles apart from what I've been used to. But certainly, yeah, you can tell in general the nines here have a big role to play, and you know, a lot of the time are involved in a lot of the big plays and how the game ends up.
And you mentioned his name, so Joe Simmons playing outside you, a man that you know very, very well, obviously from the Premiership. But what is it like to have a man like that alongside you as a halfback partner in the top 14?
Yeah, it's great, to be honest. I was very fortunate last year when I came and I had Zach Henry, who was, you know, fluent in French and an English guy and brilliant bloke, and that really helped me settle. Really helped me settle into things. He was brilliant with me, so. Yeah, obviously to have Joe come in and kind of keep the English, the fly half going is a big help, of course. I'm not going to lie and say, no, you know, I'd love a French fly half always. And yeah, it's very different. But to be able to just take a second during a game and just have that chat with him and just assess things sometimes, it's pretty important. And it's quite nice just, I think, for him as well to settle in as quick as possible. We've got obviously myself sometimes at nine and Jack Maddox at fullback. So we're pretty key there just to have that line of communication and help each other out.
You've obviously got a lot of influence already, Dan. You've got it written into your contract that you've got to have an English fly half outside.
Yeah,
I like it.
I might have to add that.
You mentioned Zach last season as well. He's been on the show before, friend of the show. Loves the shoof, he always tells us. So did he get you into that last season?
He loves a what, sorry?
Loves a shoof, like a very strong Belgian beer. Was that on the go last season?
Nah, he's all chat, Zach. He's all chat. The shoof. He'll be a Heineken with a pesh. That's what he is. It's a little drop of peach. Yeah,
a demi pesh.
Yeah, a little demi pesh. That's not a shoof.
He's been exposed. I like it.
No, he's good bloke, Zach.
And speaking about other players at Poe, Johnny said the other week that you guys have got no superstars, which I thought was outrageous, particularly to you, Dan, but just to other players at Poe. But I suppose on a serious note, he has a point in terms of, we spoke to Tyler Ardron at Cast a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying how there's no egos at all in that dressing room. And most clubs you go to, you'll have one or two that maybe are set apart, might think a bit more of themselves than others do. You sort of touched on it earlier on. It seems like a club where everyone is pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, in the nicest way possible, you're probably right. There's no superstars, big egos in that team. And you know, I don't know how that would work because, you know, the boys are really tight. Like I said, that there is obviously that little split of the French and the foreigners, like kind of as you'd expect. But, you know, the French guys, especially to me, I found have been amazing. All the lads have been really welcoming and wanted to, you know, to get the best out of you on and off the pitch as well. So, and I think as long as you show that and, you know, you work hard and you respect them and, you know, you go for a few beers with them as well, which is never a bad thing. They're always there to support. And, you know, we've got a pretty good blend of that at the minute.
Can't believe you threw him under the bus, Tim. I didn't say that. I might have said that.
You said they were all grafters, no quality at all.
I said they're all grafters and that Dan was the rock star. That's what I said. Yeah. If you go back and pick out that quote, you got one rock star about to rock up, Sam Whitelock, the only man to have played in three World Cup finals. I played with his brother Adam. You've got Luke at the club already. Is Sam arrived in Poe? Is he there and ready to take in training? Is he there yet?
I think he arrives at the end of this week. So be good timing, a couple of weeks of the Challenge Cup for us. We've got a week in Durban next week and then Dragons at home. So I think give him a couple of weeks to settle in and find his feet and then maybe Clermont at home, the big reveal. And, you know, hopefully we can keep the run going, especially at home. We're pretty strong at the minute. And, you know, he can be another influential figure for us that's going to add you know, and a vast amount of experience and quality.
Sam has got a lovely head of hair on him. It's common in France when a new player arrives to shave the head. I think that happens more to the younger guys, but is that something you got planned for him, or is there something different in the Po initiation?
We didn't really have much initiation unless I just skipped it for obvious reasons.
You're mid-season. Maybe you swerved it.
Maybe. They took one look at me and went, we won't put him through the head shaving just to spare his blushes. But no, we had a little initiation at the start of the year. Nothing too crazy. So we'll see, but yeah, he might have a couple of get out of jail free cards, to be fair, with his CV coming in.
And every club is every club I've been, it doesn't matter what you, not that I had a big CV, but even people with big CVs that arrived, everyone got shafted. So what is the Po initiation, because it's different in every club? So what are the elder statesmen making the young pups and the players coming in do at Po?
We just had a bit of a court session this year, and we had an afternoon at a kayak session in town. We went whitewater rafting and stuff, and then all the new players and young lads got told to dress up in cycling gear. And basically, we were going for the afternoon to one of the wineries to have a bit of a few drinks together and stuff, which was about 20, 30 minutes away. About to get on the bus to leave, and basically got kicked off the bus and said, no, you lot have got to find your own way there. Quickly, all the lads dispersed, and me, Joe, and Hayden Thompson Stringer were left there, three English-speaking English blokes going, what the fuck are we going to do here? But we managed to get a lift with a lovely French lady and sorted that out. And then, yeah, just had a few beers together, the usual kind of English chat and a few drinks for being English. And that was it, really. So, yeah, pretty tame compared to a few. Certainly the Gloucester ones back in the day when I first came through were pretty horrific.
The Gloucester one is famous. So like, talk us through your experience of the Gloucester Milk Challenge, because it is rank.
Yeah, so what was I, 18, 19? And we went to Portugal, and there was about seven of us that were planned to do it on the last day. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to. I was 75 kilos wet through at this time. I was 18, skinny as anything. I was like, and one of the lads came up to me and went, why don't you just shave it? You're going to have to shave it at the end of the week. Just shave it. And then at least you'll get a week of sun on the head. You won't have a pail. And I was like, it's a really good idea. So I shaved it at the start of the week, and geez, it was horrific. And then, yeah, all the boys and attempted it at the end of the week, and I don't think anyone ended up doing it. But yeah, there was always a few get out clauses with those ones, with age and international and stuff, until one year we were in France, Jimmy Cowan's first year.
Oof, loose as a goose.
Loose, one of my favourite blokes ever, brilliant bloke. And again, initiation stuff was doing it, and he's just grabbed the clippers and just gone. Bearing in mind, he's capped the All Blacks, everything done. And then we were like, right, everyone's got to do it then, I guess. So there was no holds bar after that.
So you didn't actually do the milk challenge then when you came through?
I attempted it, but very, very cautiously, as I was already had my head shaved. So it seemed a bit of a pointless exercise for me.
Because this might be one of those kind of apocryphal tales, but I heard that your nickname, which followed you around a little bit in the Premiership, came from that attempt at the milk challenge.
Well, yeah, from my shaved head, yes. Dobby, the house elf.
And do they know that in France? Is that translated into French? Well, apologies if it does after this.
No, it's fine. It's one thing that actually hasn't followed me here, so it's not too bad.
Do they love Harry Potter in France, Johnny?
They do now, mate. They love a Dobby. They love Dan, they love Dobby. They do now, mate. You're screwed. Apologies.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
Back to the serious rugby. Sebastian Piccaroni is your head coach. He's obviously worked with quite a few of the France stars as boss of the France under 20 side and various age group sides over the years. He's obviously perhaps not a high profile household name to the rest of the world, doing very good things in France, very highly thought of. So give us an insight into what he's like as a head coach.
Yeah, he's pretty calm. He's pretty collected in what he's about. He's pretty methodical in what he's done. He's quite astute in who he brings in, and I think it's quite English almost in you see who he wants to bring in and the squad we want to build. And you know, we touched on it earlier about not having potential superstars, but the people that we have got are all on the same wavelength and all working hard. And I think it's important about those kind of people that he brings in. You know, Joe Simmons, for example, like, brilliant bit of business, bringing, you know, a Premiership European champion in, but, you know, not massively flash. He's not going to, you know, suddenly start being a Marcus Smith and trying everything, but an incredible player nonetheless, and probably perfect for the game that we want, and really tries to steer the team, and, you know, an incredible goal kicker as well. So just things like that, I think he's got his head pretty well switched on about what kind of squad he wants. And, you know, he's big on, he was very successful at under 20s, so he's big on the young lads coming through. And, you know, fair play, but we've got a good, very good crop of young lads at the minute coming through and playing. I think Teo Atasogbi, just for one, for the winger that's been playing for us at the minute, has been absolutely on fire and just turned 19, I think. So Emelian got player of the year, young player of the year last year. So, you know, I think it's really important to get that good mix of experienced guys that are driving the team, and then these young guys that just bring all this energy up through the academy and are playing, and when they get given their chance are performing well. So, yeah, it's a brilliant mix at the minute.
One on Emelian Gajetan, you mentioned him there. He won the Young Player of the Year last season. It's just such a standout season, and he's still very young. Obviously, second season syndrome is difficult, but he's obviously a star. He was born in Croydon, right? Got English connections. Have you explored with him?
He's the most English sounding French player I've ever met in my life. When I first came over and I started speaking to him, I was like, why don't I know you? Why? I don't know this English guy. I thought it was just Zach that was English here. And now he's French English. But yeah, it's impressive, to be fair to him. He's a very talented young man.
Can you talk us through his qualities? Because he's come through, like, again, nobody really outside France knows about him. He's picked up a couple of caps. He's on the radar with Fabien Galthié. They've called him like a young Conrad Smith, Snakey, who was there before you joined the club. But talk us through his qualities. Why is he so impressive? Why did he win Player of the Year last year? And what should we look out for this season?
I think first and foremost, he's incredibly hardworking. I think he puts in a lot of hard work, and I think that's always something you look at in these young guys sometimes, you know, that have all the talent, and are they putting in the work behind the scenes to grasp every 1% out of everything? And he's someone that certainly is. He works incredibly hard at what he does. He's very professional, but he's got a lot of natural talent as well. So, you know, he's very quick defensively as a 13 as well. Like, he reads the game really well for a young guy, which, you know, we always talked about it takes a few years to gain that experience defensively. And I think he's got a lot to give, and he's only going to get better. That's the scary thing. I think he's 20 now, and he's going to keep playing and keep getting better and keep getting exposed. And he's not someone that'll let it go to his head. Briefly knowing him for the last year or so, I think he keeps himself very grounded and keeps a good group of people around him as well. And, you know, he wants to work hard and he wants to succeed.
Another youngster that's picked up some decent game time this season is Hugo Oradou. So the son of David, who played for Stade Français in France ages ago. What's he like as a bloke? Because again, we see the sort of gangly, that he also must be 18, 19 years old. But the fact that he's getting game time in the top 14 at such a young age, he's got Sam Whitelock arriving to be his mentor. Like, how far could he go as well?
The same as Emelian for me, all the way, for sure. He's, again, like you said, when you look at him, you don't go, oh, he's going to be physically imposing, or
same as his dad.
Do it? Yeah, and it's impressive. Again, works really hard. Bit of a line out nose, which is always good for a young second row. And yeah, he works hard and he puts himself around. He's got good skills. He's very French in the way he plays. He loves an offload. He loves keeping the ball alive. And yeah, again, someone that will massively benefit from getting a lot of game time this year, physically as well, and mentally. Just leading the line out as well is such a big thing for such a young guy. And when he does it, he's spot on. So yeah, another guy that will definitely, well, hopefully go get some French caps sooner rather than later.
And speaking of second rowers, Maro Itoje is the latest Englishman to be rumoured with coming across to the top 14. There's going to be loads, right, because of the scenario that's happening back in the Premiership. Do you think the RFU has to loosen the rules on who can play for England and where they are? Because if you've got Willis, you've got Ludlam coming over, you've got an Arundel potentially and a Toji as well. Surely they have to change something.
Yeah, it's that tough one, isn't it? That kind of dilemma of if we change it, will everyone go? And for me at the minute, the way people are coming to France and, you know, the top 14 just seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you're comparing that to the Premiership and, you know, you're looking at a 10-team Premiership. It's not a lot of games. There's teams struggling. It's tough. And if you suddenly went, right, we'll take the English stuff out of it, are your big players going to go and sign for France? And then who's coming to see the Premiership as well when you lose kind of even more big names? I think it's finding that balance and it's incredibly tricky. I don't envy anyone that has to make that decision. Maybe a couple of years ago it would have been sensible when there was a few more teams in the league and just try to expand the game and expand the league for sure. But, you know, English rugby at the minute is teetering on a little bit of a precipice. So it'd just be interesting to see how it goes from there. But I know speaking to a lot of the English guys that have come over and were in my situation last year that came over have loved it. They bought into the philosophy over here. And the big difference for me is every week is an absolute battle. Every week is an absolute Goliath. Like, just the atmospheres, the stadiums are just incredible. And there's probably something that, you know, coming here, you know, 30-odd have gone to appreciate every game has been amazing. Even, you know, those tough games against the bottom of the league. Last year it was us. You know, you're selling out against teams and it's just great. And it's a massive, massive positive to be playing those games.
And we've seen Australia bring in the Gitto law to try and get around these rules and try and get people playing abroad whilst protecting their national side. Do you think the RFU could bring in an Itoje rule? If he was to come over, he has that amount of caps, they still want him back. Could that be something they could use to still retain some of their talent for international games?
What about a Robson rule, Johnny? 14 caps, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe you might have to have started a test, I reckon, to be eligible for that law. But yeah, no, potentially, I think it's definitely something to look at. And it's just figuring out what's an acceptable amount of caps and kind of will it happen if people get to 25, 26 caps and they're like, yep, sweet, I'll go to France now and I've kind of got there. It's a massively difficult situation. I think I know the RFU want as many of their players playing in England and, you know, so fans can go and watch week in, week out Premiership rugby with, you know, the biggest and best stars in England playing. I think if they keep losing more and more, it'll be a struggle for sure.
You're only 31. I mean, I know you've signed a deal at Poe until 2025, I think, and obviously you're loving life at the moment. We don't know whether the rules will change, whether they won't change, but at that age, you would harbour hopes of more England caps, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's not something I've written off. It's also a difficult thing to think about. Like you said, now I've extended here and I've signed here, it's obviously at the minute not an option. So it's not something that, you know, I'm thinking about too much. It's not something that's crossed my mind a lot. I've just kind of got all my focus here and, you know, starting a family here and really enjoying and embracing the kind of French lifestyle and trying to get Poe to a situation where we want to be, not at the bottom of the table, kind of scrapping for relegation every year. So yeah, it's obviously something that you never kind of shut off, but at the minute it's not a viable option for me. And, you know, I think being here and playing at Poe at the minute is the best decision for me.
And looking back a little bit, 14, 15 caps, I remember watching you and there was a bit of outcry at the time that you should have started some games. And I remember thinking, why isn't this boy starting some games? He deserves to start. So do you look back with a little bit of, I should have had a time to start, like, because I thought you deserved it. And internally, we all push for ourselves and we think we're capable, but you clearly were more than capable of starting tests for England. So there's a little bit of you that looks back and thinks you should have had a shot. And potentially there is that little bit of unfinished business that you'd love to get that start in a 9 jersey for England.
Absolutely. I think I'm very proud of my English career and, you know, my international career. Getting 14 caps is a dream come true, of course. But yeah, there's always that part of me that will be like, I want to start. I want to, you know, really show what I can do from the start. And and give that in an England shirt. But, you know, it wasn't meant to be at the minute, and it wasn't meant to be during my, you know, stint a couple of years ago. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from there. But for sure, it'd always be nice to kind of have that number nine shirt hanging up and something to look back at, at least to be given that opportunity, I think would be the nicest thing, yeah.
And in terms of that selection decision, did you feel, or do you feel, like you were sort of unfairly pigeonholed as a scrum half who was all about speed and all about attack, and therefore like a really good bench option rather than a nine who's going to manage the game from the start?
Yeah, to some extent. I think that kind of showed in the games that I came on, really. I'd come on when teams were, you know, we were either up by quite a few or down by quite a few and needed to change the game. There probably wasn't the confidence that I had that, you know, if the game's really tight, go on and, you know, manage the game and see the game out and have that impact for sure, which is disappointing. And you know, it's I always wanted to get rid of that tag of, you know, being a fast nine and, you know, quick and can change the game. You know, I always wanted to add things to my game to be able to go, right, well, okay, if that's the perception that someone has of me, I need to change that a little bit without changing the whole thing. But, you know, I kind of ruined my look on things. But what can I do to make my game more rounded so other people are going, right, he can play a kicking game, for instance. So, yeah, it's one of those things that you learn over time as well, for sure. I feel like my game at the minute is in a good place. I got pretty much, you know, depending on how the game's going, I feel like I can have an impact, whatever the way that is. So I think that's really important.
And looking back, mate, at that time with England, it was Eddie Jones. East had some couple of months as well as a coach. But what was your experience with Eddie like? Everyone seems to have a bit of a mixed bag. But what was yours like on a personal level?
Yeah, pretty mixed bags. Pretty good way to sum it up. I think, you know, I'll always be grateful to Eddie, as he was the one that gave me my opportunity with England. I think that's the first and foremost thing that I would always go back to. He gave me my opportunity. He gave me my first cap. I think the communication stuff was pretty difficult for me at the time. I think I wanted probably to go in and find my feet a little bit and really settle into the squad when we had like a big campaign in the Six Nations. Probably got thrust into a few things that I wasn't ready for at the time. But yeah, it was always a difficult situation for sure. It wasn't, you're not ever comfortable with Eddie. And obviously some people absolutely love that. Some people thrive on that all the time. And I think for me, my chunk of my caps are in COVID as well. So it was, you know, extra tough. You're training, you're going back to your room, you're staying on your own, it's pretty lonely. And then when you do get that interaction, it can be quite negative. So you're like, it was a tough few weeks for sure in that campaign. But, you know, like I said, he's a brilliant coach, and, you know, England did very well under him, and he's obviously struggled in the last couple of months, but that is what it is.
And everyone's got an Eddie Jones story as well. I remember we had Henry Thomas, wasn't it, Johnny, who came on and now playing for Wales. But Henry said Eddie asked him to describe himself in three words. And I don't know what words he gave. And then he was cut. That was it. So I don't know what he said, but it obviously didn't go down well with Eddie. Was there anything like that? Obviously, his manner can be quite abrupt. But did you have anything happen to you, or did you say anything that was a bit wacky, a bit out there?
Not really. I remember one time we were having a chat and he said, he was kind of like, what do you need to be to get a start and stuff? And I was just talking about my game. And I think that season at the time, my assists was top of the charts for a nine, and my running meters and stuff. So I was like, my X factor is, you know, getting in the game, making breaks and supporting and doing that. And he just lost it and said, I fucking don't use it. X factor's the worst. I hate that expression, I hate that, and just lost it at me. And I was just like, is that what you've just taken from what we just said? I've used X Factor. I was like, and we had a laugh about it a couple of days later. But yeah, at the time I was bricking it.
He said what I wanted, Dan, was how many box kicks you do a game. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, probably. Still wouldn't have been enough, I don't think.
And obviously, back when you were winning caps for England, Steve Borthwick was the assistant coach for a period as well. So what was your view of him back then? Obviously, a very detailed, analytical kind of coach working with the forwards rather than with you. And what have you made of his tenure so far as England boss?
Yeah, I had some very good interactions with Steve. Like you said, he's so analytical and he reads the game really well. He sees the game really well. And I think I didn't have too much to do with him when it was with the forwards. But when I did, his detail was fantastic. And it gave the players and even myself a lot of confidence in what they were doing, because, you know, you could see behind Steve, he got so much research done and he was so confident in assuring him what he was saying. There was no kind of what ifs or what, and people just got on with their jobs. So, yeah, he's a very, very impressive coach, and it's been an interesting tenure for sure. I think England have kind of gone with this game plan, and you know, people from the outset have had their opinions on it, and you know, whatever that may be. But when you look down to the crux of it, they had a pretty successful World Cup all in all. And I think, yeah, it was difficult in the warm-ups, but who really cares about warm-up games? Who really notices too much about warm-up games? I think the big things are those knockout games, and you know, they were a point away from getting to a final and beating the world champs. So as results go, I think it was a positive World Cup. Performance wise, yeah, everyone will kind of have their 10 cents and want to have a chirp in, but the game's always evolving and always adapting. That's the thing. And it's about, for him and the coaches, what's next? What's the next kind of flurry of how the game's going to be won and how the game's going to be reffed? And I think that's the big thing. And obviously, everyone wants to see free-flowing rugby and Arundel scoring 5 tries every game. We all do, of course. But fortunately, that's not how we win games. And it's about finding the way of... I'd like to see now, with a 4-year cycle before the World Cup, of, you know, a bit of fresh meat in there and not being afraid to lose a game or two. I think that's the important thing. I think probably before, it was everything was about winning. Everything you did was about winning. And I think, of course, you're playing for your country and you're never not going to want to win. But is the process and is the long-term process of moulding a team and moulding a group that you want to, in 4 years' time, be where you want it to be? Are you going to lose games across the 4 years? Absolutely. Is it the be-all and end-all? No, it's not. As long as you learn and you kind of get the group where you want them to be.
And I guess that'll be similar for all the nations now, right? The end of the cycle, the World Cup's just been. So looking ahead, let's take maybe 3 or 4 boys from the Prem and 3 or 4 from the top 14 that you'd like to see Steve Borthwick bring through. It's like, in the Prem, who have you been impressed with that you'd love to see get capped and get a run of games over the next few competitions? And the same, like, who have you seen in France that you think could be the answer or add something different to Fabien Galtier's squad?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it with players we've already mentioned, but Arundel, for me, you know, you see him in the top 14 already, scored 4 tries in 2 games, 3 games. And that was probably the most disappointing thing from that tournament, was that game. He touched the ball once, and I understand he's got to learn, and he will keep learning about how he can get himself involved. But, you know, a guy like that who is a massive, massive talent, you want to see get the ball and you want to give him the ball, not just go looking for the ball. There has to be areas that they can get him involved. You see Rassing a couple of weeks ago against Toulon ran 2 different lineouts just to get him the ball in some space. They've targeted that and they've gone, we want you here and we're going to give you the ball. Go do you. And that's what I'd love to see in an England shirt and him.
You did very well there, Dan. If Eddie's listening, you did that whole thing without saying X Factor. I thought it was coming.
I've improved. It's been a couple of years now. And the same, yeah, we'll go opposite wing, basically. Teo Atasogbi at Poe, I think. He's been very impressive for me. Works really hard. Not massively flash, but geez, he breaks tackles for fun. He's electric. And yeah, definitely one to watch for the future. Not that they're that short of French wingers at the minute, but if he keeps doing what he's doing, I think for sure he'll get an opportunity to come soon.
I just want to go back to your England career just briefly, because some people may know the story. It was out there, but a lot of people won't. Hopefully everything's okay now. And I don't know if there's any lingering effects, but it was when you were playing for England, preparing for a game against Scotland a few years ago, and you had DVT, which spread from your lower leg to your lungs, and it was massively serious. So just talk us through how that all unfolded.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one, to be honest. I had a bit of a tight calf the week of the Italy game, as you do as rugby players, and you just, see the physio, bit of massage and bit of a tight calf, nothing. Wasn't really going, and then it felt a little bit easier when I was running around and training. So I was like, well, that's all I need to be doing, so it doesn't matter. If it hurts when I'm lying down, that's fine. If I can run around and kick a ball and run, that's all good. Played the Italy game, and then the morning after, went to go to the physio room, and I was just really struggling to even get to the physio room. My calf was really swollen and pitty and sore. So I went to get scanned, basically kind of gave me a couple of things of what it could be, and DVT was the bottom of the list, kind of given, you know, my age, my fitness level and all those things. Not been on any flights, so wasn't too worried. And then that afternoon session, the doc called me in and was like, look, you know what we said it wasn't going to be. It's that, unfortunately. So we need to get to the hospital. And very lucky in the fact that I was in camp at the time and, you know, I was so well looked after. Some brilliant doctors and nurses, and kind of went in, had some scans, and then walked in to see the specialist, and he kind of laughed and looked at me and was like, why are you walking? Like, why are you putting it on? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, you should be in a wheelchair getting wheeled around with the amount of clots you've got. And I was like, pretty bit of a big blow, to be honest. And then obviously had a couple of operations that week. And then he was like, this is the plan, the World Cup week. I want to be ready for the World Cup. Can I be ready? He says, look, you need to be on blood thinners for at least 6 months, which would have taken me way too long. And he was like, but we can try 3 months, then a few other things. And then at 3 months, we'll review it and see where you're at and make a decision from there. And the 3 months was kind of the start of the end of the season to go into World Cup camp. So, yeah, it was a strange one because I was on blood thinners. I felt good. I felt I just couldn't do contact. So I was running and gymming and felt as fit as anything, but couldn't do anything rugby related. So it was frustrating. Yeah. And then obviously got called into that camp, which was amazing for me. That was probably one of the proudest moments I've had, just getting called into that, just for, you know, I put in a lot of work for those 3 months, and that was my goal that I'd wanted. So it was a big kind of tick box for me. And, you know, I thought at the time was like a big nod to me from Eddie as well. Like, look, we want you here. This is, you know, you worked hard to get back. We did a week's training, then a week's army camp. And then that weekend he was like, you're going home. So it was a bit of a kick in the teeth, to be honest. I worked very hard to get back for probably 3 sessions of rugby, and then get told, you know, you're going home. Was again, kind of went from here to here, which kind of summed my England career up a little bit. It was a pretty crazy couple of months. But thankfully, touch wood now, everything's good. Still keep on top of it and get checkups and all that. But yeah, it's like I said, it's been all right since. So,
mate, what a roller coaster! And again, just to go back and ask a bit more, the cause, did you get this has happened because, or and then ongoing treatment, you said you're on top of it now. So what is the ongoing course of treatment? Do you still have to treat?
Yeah, so we didn't find a cause, which is probably the frustrating thing. I think you kind of wanted to, I had blood tests done, every kind of test done ever, every scan done to find the reason, and we couldn't find it, which is probably frustrating as well, because it's one of those things where you then don't know how to prevent it happening again. It's just a bit of a horse for course situation. And then there's not a lot, to be honest. I've just got to look and be careful now with any long journeys. I live in calf socks. Any flights over 4 hours, I go on anticoags again for a couple of days.
And then, yeah, I'll get a checkup every year and just kind of chat to the doctor through what's been happening and how everything's been going. And she'll kind of give me a brief rundown of how I am and all that. So, you know, it's one of those things that you get on with and it doesn't hamper you too much nowadays.
And when you were trying to find out the cause of it all and you were having those scans, is it true that, you know, they mentioned the C word, you had keyhole surgery, a couple of operations, one of which was on your birthday, is that right?
Yeah, it was my 27th, I think. It was very, very fun, followed by, you know, watching England blow a big lead against Scotland the following day. So, of course, everything kind of gets mentioned and that was always the big one, really. Why else would it be there? With someone my age, you know, DVT's very heavily in, you know, overweight people and, you know, people pregnant or long flights. I didn't really tick any of the boxes of the people on my ward. I was a bit of an anomaly of all the people there. So yeah, that was thrown around a little bit, but luckily and thankfully that kind of got shunned away and wasn't the case. So yeah, it was just unfortunately one of those things, I think.
And there are no risks with playing now. You've got the all clear, everything is cool, and you're happy to crack on.
Yeah, all good now, all good. Well, I hope anyway, I've been doing it for a couple of years. So,
you mentioned that before you moved to Pau, you mentioned that before you moved to Pau, a couple of Premiership clubs were interested and things were flying around. And understandably, you were a bit bitter towards the Premiership and kind of a fresh start and something new would definitely appeal. Since then, you've obviously signed on to stay. Things are going really well in France. But I don't know if I'm right in saying that you came close to moving back to Gloucester and there would have been other offers on the table before you signed that extension. So is coming back to the Premiership still something you would like to do, depending what the landscape is at the end of your deal now? Or do you think you're kind of happy to carry on playing in France or explore other opportunities elsewhere?
It's tough, to be honest. I think the one thing I've learned over the last 12 months is just to kind of take everything in your stride and be open with everything. Don't you know, worry about too much and being tied down with everything. You know, opportunities come and go. And I think if the opportunity came to come back to the Premiership in the future and it was the right one for me and my family at the time, you know, I'd absolutely explore that, of course. You know, I'm very thankful to English rugby and the Premiership and everything that I've kind of been through over the last 10, 11 years. And of course, there's that kind of part of me that wouldn't go, I'd love to finish in England and, you know, in front of a lot of people that have supported me over the years and, you know, fans, family and all that. But at the minute, I'm loving it here. It's a brilliant place to be. And, you know, the rugby's going well. We just had a little boy 6 weeks ago. So everything's a bit crazy, but no, I'm loving it now. So it's very enjoyable.
A bit like Johnny's kids, he might grow up to support France.
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to get him into French lessons already. I want him bilingual. I don't want him to be suffering like me.
Get him in the creche, mate. It's essentially cheaper than a French lesson anyway, and it's social.
That is true.
What's his name? Have you called him Jean-Jacques? What's his name?
His name's Laker. So nothing French.
He'll find his way. He'll be easy.
And you mentioned big games every week in the top 14. You're up against, I guess, last week, Ben White this weekend against Toulon. So what do you make of them so far?
Impressive. I think Toulon, when you look at, you know, their squad depth and their team and, you know, they're massive. They've got a big old pack and then some quality right behind it. And Whitey's just kind of added to that. So that's brilliant for us, just another international nine to review and look out for. But no, they're impressive. They've got a good attacking structure. They do have, you know, world-class internationals throughout their team. But I think right to the core, they're just a big physical team and they want to bully you, get over the game line and win that game line. And, you know, if we can stop that, that's the first kind of protocol for us. Stop them winning the game line, stop them at scrum time and line out time. If we can do that, you know, we're in with a shout. But like I said before, for us, we're enjoying the ride at the minute. We won't have any fear going down there for the first time probably in a few years. So we'll just go and enjoy it and play our rugby and see what happens at the end of it.
Thanks so much for coming on, Dan. Good luck this weekend for the rest of the season. And here's hoping they bring in a Robson rule and we see you back playing for England sometime soon.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers, Dan.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Great to have Dobby on, Johnny. We're calling him that now. That is potentially going to stick now in France, do you think?
Well, he's going to hate you because now his teammates are going to know about it. Great to have him on. Really interesting character as well, because I always thought he deserved more of a time with England. But love the way he plays, always have. Great to see him doing really well with Poe in tandem with Joe Simmons as well. So les roast beef, the two roast beefs, as they'll be called by their teammates, the halfback combination, the English boys, but they're playing in a side that is well-organized, settled, full of young Frenchies that are developing and playing really well at high-level rugby. So, mate, it's cool to see him sort of at the root of that from halfback, and really cool to get an insight on the character and how he operates as well. I think it'll be tough for them this weekend down in Pau, down in Toulon, sorry. But come the end of the season, like you mentioned, the last time they won the comp was in the 60s, like in 1960s. So to give the sort of Bernay public a team that they're proud of, something to shout about, and this year potentially a real shot at the playoffs. Like if they keep going, they're second at the minute. You mentioned as well, they're not in Champions Cup, they're in Challenge Cup. So they're not going to be super interested by that. The top 14 is going to be the focus. Potentially this year could be the year to get into the top six. So no, really cool to have him on. Great to see Poe doing well and flying high, and hopefully it'll continue.
Yeah, it was a good talker, Dan. And it's not a surprise, but it was interesting to hear him talk about the fact that he was pigeonholed, and he felt that as well as a scrum half, that he wanted to show other people, even though he will have been motivated by himself and everything that he wanted to achieve. He did feel that from the outside, that people were talking about him as a scrum half that will inject pace into a game, will be great off the bench. And he never got that chance to show that he could obviously manage a game in all different aspects from
very
the start.
Well.
And then you move to France, and obviously he's showing that week in, week out. It adds another string to his bow.
Well, I felt like, I'm not sure if the Prem set up differently, but I always felt he could control game. Just for me, he had that X factor, which Eddie Jones seemingly doesn't like the word or the phrase. But how ridiculous is that as well, that a coach asks you to go through? Some coaches use different terminology, like what's your super strength? Tell me what your super strength is, what you're really good at. It's just like, why'd you get upset about that and throw it back in somebody's face? Total prick. Anyway, I thought he was tremendous at managing the game, and he had that little sprinkle of stardust, superpower, X factor, whatever you want to call it, that he could change a game. He could inject pace and really frighten defenses. And that's what he's doing with Poe. At the minute, it's difficult weather as well. It's winter rugby. And when he comes into March, April, May, and things start to sort of tidy up and the sun comes back out, he'll be even more dangerous. So he's been exceptional so far this season and last for Poe. And he'll go from strength to strength. The chances of him getting back into the England setup, though, with Borthwick at the helm, probably limited, but you'd love to see it for him. You'd love to see him get that start that he clearly wants, probably deserved, and is more than capable of having. So it'd be great to see him back in the white of England as well.
And we touched on it with him. Sebastian Piccarone is obviously, as coach, with his background working with young French talent. Dan mentioned how good he is on the recruitment side of things. Obviously, Joe Simmons is a big signing as well as Dan. They do seem to have a really good blend of the talented youngsters that Dan was talking about, and some very good foreign recruitment, but also the kind of characters that are likely to get you through a long grind of a top 14 season.
Yeah, Dan and Joe would be two good case in point. And then you've also got Sam Whitelock arriving, like coming with no ego, just graft, tremendous at what he does. And he's only going to add. He's not going to detract or be an ego, destroy anything. And that isn't always the way that coaches recruit. Coaches go often by data and statistics and numbers, and they don't look at the personality, whereas clearly Piccarone's has got a fundamental basic level of what he wants from his players, but there's a clear type of person he's recruited as well, and that's serving them really well.
And aside from their trip to Toulon, what stands out for you this weekend in the top 14?
Mate, there's a pile. We already talked about it earlier, but Bayonne against Montpellier, I don't want to say it's defining, but if Montpellier come to Bayonne down the road for me and they get 40 points put on them, kind of worried about where they go.
You're saying it's a 10-pointer. You get a 6-pointer in football. Mate, we're huge. Only about 8 games in, it's a 10-pointer.
It's absolutely huge, but psychologically the difference, if you're 12 points off Bayonne just before Christmas, like it doesn't make Christmas easy. Like I've been there before, it's not an easy place to be. So Montpellier need to come away with, if they don't get a result on a win, they have to be more compact, they have to be harder to break down defensively, they have to work harder for their backfield. The amount of time you've seen Julien Tisserand in backfield getting smashed because nobody's tracking back and working to help the fullback. It's crazy. So little simple things they need in order to come away with an improved performance, because they might not win the game, but they have to be close. They have to show fight, character, and show they care about each other. That's what they need to do this weekend. So looking forward to that one. Another old side cast up against Lyon. traditionally very tight affairs. La Rochelle against Perpignan. Is that going to be the game that propels La Rochelle back to more comfortable ways? They haven't looked themselves. Teddy Thomas' red card at weekend didn't help. But La Rochelle kind of stuttered through the start of the season. Oyonnax-Bordeaux, another one. Oyonnax with a big win at Montpellier last weekend, but Bordeaux coming to town. Quick synthetic pitch in Oyonnax. Bordeaux was probably the best backline in the top 14 at the minute. That might be difficult. Clermont Racing as well, two huge teams. And then the classical, Stade Francais against Toulouse. So that's always an epic. It's on a fast track, Jean Bouin, half synthetic. So looking forward to a cracking game of rugby. Will we see Blair Kinghorn?
Yeah, we nearly mentioned that with Ben White last week because it was in the offing, but it wasn't officially confirmed until the day after we recorded. So an interesting move, like brilliant for him and Toulouse.
Well, we mentioned with Ben because we thought it was Toulon. So Toulon were in the market as well, but then they take in Jaminet and the whole left, big transfer fee, 500K for Toulouse. My question is going to be, where do they play him? It's a great signing. And I think he's outstanding as a fullback. The benefit for Toulouse is that he can play wing exceptionally well. I think he's a top class fullback and he can also fit in at 10. But where are Toulouse going to use him? And I would say 10 is his weakest of the three positions because I'd say he's tipping towards world-class as a fullback, an extraordinary winger as well, and then he can play 10, like he can fit in. So it'll be really interesting to see when they've got everyone back before Intermac's fit. Do you have Ramos at standoff pulling the strings? Probably as your French speaker, knowing how they want to play, and then you have Blair Kinghorn flying up on the wing or the head of a defensive line, as he does for Scotland, where he is so dangerous.
Well, I guess him and Ramos can interchange.
They can do, but that's not typically how they... Well, they do in fits and starts, but you want to have your first choice 10 with, what, 70-75% of the ball. And then if you're playing short side, then you've got Blair stepping up and playing blind side at 10. But look, I think it's a great move for him. I'm all for it in that I think the more people get out of their comfort zone, we talked about the Premiership, but for Scottish rugby players as well, where it's a small bubble, he's been there for 10 years. You're going to one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the biggest, best environments, best competitions, playing with top-class internationals from different countries from all around the world. And what an experience. So for him, I think it's phenomenal. And I think for Toulouse, they've got themselves a ridiculously good fullback that can also step in and play a multitude of different positions. So they're covering a few bases, which is cool for them.
And maybe he is the replacement for Melvin Jaminet and Antoine Dupont going for a while and getting compensation in. Maybe there will be a 10 coming as well. Who knows?
We'll wait and see.
We will. Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Dan Robson for joining us as well. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.